air today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97.
You can email us on studio at kfmradio.com, or you can call us on 045 898 999. Almost 200,000 tons of food is lost or wasted in Ireland each year. Not now by people, some of it by consumers, but most of it through farming and what's called fishing production, with up to 40% of some vegetables being discarded before it's ever sold to consumers. That 200,000 tonnes is before it ever reaches you and me. A new study has been commissioned by the Environmental Protection Agency and carried out by researchers at the Munster Technological University and UCD. We're joined by Dr. Jennifer Attard, who's Research Project Manager, Circular Bioeconomy Research Group at the Munster Technological University. Good morning, Dr. Attard, and thanks for joining us on the programme this morning. Good morning to you. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello. All right. And congratulations on the elevation of your institution, by the way, Munster Technological University. Being a Munster man myself, very, very pleased to hear about that, I have to say.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good for us, yeah.
Right. What's happened here? And just tell us a little bit of background into this research. 200,000 tonnes. What's going on?
Yeah, so there's food waste all along the supply chain, as you were mentioning as well. So there's food waste in households and retail and distribution, and restaurants and food service and processing and manufacturing. And all of those had been looked at before, and were required to report all of this to the European Commission as well. But there was never any studies in Ireland for what's happening on the farms and with fishers. So that's why we were commissioned to do this study. So we did, and it turns out that most of food production is fine. If you look at beef and dairy, and, you know, there's a few issues here and there, but they're fairly efficient. With fishing as well, there's a few issues, but the sector is a lot smaller. But what we found was with horticulture, there were significant issues. So we're talking about fruit and vegetables. Significant issues, like you were saying. There's even some fruit and veg where up to 40% of what's produced every year is just discarded.
Right. Let's get down to some of the details behind this, because we have a cost of living crisis at the moment. We have the prices of goods shooting through the roof, and people are going to be quite amazed to hear some of the details that your study has found out. Let's begin with potatoes.
So with potatoes, there's several issues. I mean, potatoes is one of the bigger issues, but not because it's actually an issue in itself, but because we produce so many potatoes that the number at the end of the day ends up being quite high, but it's not significantly worse.
But Jennifer, 73,000 tonnes of potatoes per year are lost, not because there's anything wrong with the potatoes. Is it all to do with they're not good looking enough?
That can happen as well. There's harvesting losses sometimes. The potatoes are too deep, or they fall out of the harvester. If they're too small, for example, they just wouldn't get caught. There's about 5% of all potatoes that just aren't marketable, so they end up going for animal feed. And there's storage losses as well. About 3% is lost for storage loss. So that means basically they go bad while they're being stored.
Yeah, now, we've heard before, you know, that now vegetables nearly have to pass a beauty contest before they arrive in our supermarket shelves. So, I mean, the idea that potatoes, which are perfectly good to eat, mightn't be considered good enough to make the Rose of Tralee contest in our supermarkets are then dumped. That's 73,000 tonnes of that. Then we have 18,000 tonnes of carrots are regarded as unsaleable, and 8,000 tonnes of cabbage.
Yeah, so what you're talking about there is one of the main issues that we found is the way that things look. So retailers are requiring, basically supermarkets or a lot of shops are requiring that fruit and vegetables look, like you're saying, perfect, you know, like they're going through the Rose of Tralee. So we have these expectations now where we go into the shop and we expect that everything is in stock, no matter whether it's in season or not, and everything looks absolutely perfect, and that causes a lot of issues. We're used to it now, you know, we go in and this is what we expect, but we don't actually see the impact of all of that. So that means that the retailers are only accepting that quality of fruit and vegetable from the farmers, that means that if the farmers produce anything else, they're throwing it away. And that they obviously produce, you know, carrots sometimes can be a bit wonky or so on, you hear all of these things, but they can't sell any of that. And basically what happens is for them to make sure that they produce enough that looks good, they have to overproduce, because sometimes things can happen, they'll have pests and diseases, there's natural things that happen as well, so they are going to lose, they're always going to lose a certain amount, but their risk is always to that they might lose their contract with the retailers. So if they don't produce enough that's perfect, they lose their contract and that's their whole market gone. So they will overproduce and overproduce just to make sure that they can have enough that's perfect.
When is the last time, folks, that you saw a dirty carrot or a dirty potato? Everything now comes sort of pristine on the shelves, but this is the cost of it. Tens of thousands of good food being dumped because of this. Let's go on. 42,000 tons of meat is wasted annually at primary production level before it ever gets anywhere. 30,000 tons of beef and 8,600 tons of pig meat. And I'll just throw out a few other things there. 3,300 tons of milk is discarded each year due to mastitis in cows. Well, I don't want a pint of milk, you know, that has come from a cow with mastitis. That's the only statistic I've seen so far. There's 1,485 tons of poultry products wasted, 5,600 tons of mushrooms, 2,200 tons of turnips. Now, are you ready, lads and lassies out there? Because they're the wrong shape. Now, when did you last look at your turnip and say, I don't like your figure, I'd like a nice slim turnip? 700 tons of cauliflower and broccoli are discarded because supermarkets cancelling orders at the last minute. And then you have the same kind of wastage going on at fisheries level. 2,315 tons of fish, generally. 2,061 tons of salmon. Ah, my God, Jennifer, this is unconscionable, is it not?
Yeah, so with salmon you can find, for example, like there's bad conditions, overcrowding, for example, and disease, and even with the seas warming that can exacerbate things and, you know, make things worse for them. There's issues there, and animal welfare can come into it as well, which is why potentially, you know, like we've pushed the beef sector a lot in Ireland, so that it's fairly efficient. You hear a number and it's a fairly large number, but compared to what we're producing in beef, it's actually not bad at all. It's a very, very efficient system. You know, cows are always going to get sick, things are going to happen, you can't have a...
It's still an extraordinary tonnage of food across all those different aspects that's been wasted, but it has a further impact because it has an impact on our climate system, and you point out, I think, that it poses significant challenges for the agricultural sector, which is responsible for 33% of Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions. Are you of the view then that we're overproducing, as you mentioned earlier?
Definitely, we are overproducing. I think what happens as well is that the price is a big issue, and like you, I think how you started off earlier, you were talking about, you know, prices for things are going up, but the price of food is still a lot lower than it should be. Do you know, I think.
Do you think so?
Oh, for sure.
Jennifer, you just caused the whole of County Kildare to cry into their soup. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, if you do shop from, you know, organic shops or farmers markets or, you know, smaller producers, sometimes they will charge you a little bit more if they have, like, natural processes, you know, processes on their farm that respect nature and, you know, include biodiversity and all these things. They are going to charge you more money, and those are the things that we're supposed to be doing. But because we aren't paying those prices, most people aren't buying organic or aren't, they're just not willing to pay the price that, you know, some sort of cheaper supermarkets would allow them to pay, then it causes issues because farmers then don't have enough money to invest, to improve. They don't have the time and the resources to swap to organic, for example, because that could, you know, they might view that as being far too much effort for them if they're already struggling at the moment with what they're producing.
Indeed. So we'd encourage people to go to your farmers' markets, to go to your local farmers, because the farmers supplying the big multiple supermarkets, their margins are being driven down so much. We've had protests from the farming community during the year saying it's no longer feasible for us to continue producing at these rates. So cheap isn't always best, folks, as we're finding out. So the next time you go in and find your carrots and potatoes parading up and down the aisle saying how good looking I am, you might keep in mind the fact the amount that's dumped. 200,000 tons a year of those various foods being dumped before they ever reach us, the consumer. That research carried out by the Munster Technological University, also by some input from UCD, and lead researcher on the project is Dr. Jennifer Attard of the Circular Bioeconomy Research Group at the Munster Technological University. Great to talk to you, Jennifer. Thank you.
You too. Thank you so much.
And have a nice weekend, and well done on that research.
Thank you so much. You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Good morning to you. Right, lads, there you have it. I'll just give you some of the stats again, in case you don't believe me. 73,000 tons of potatoes are dumped, 18,000 tons of carrots, 8,000 tons of cabbage, 42,000 tons of meat, which includes 30,000 of beef and 8,600 tons of pig meat, 3,300 tons of milk. Well, now that's a good one because it's due to mastitis in cows. But all the rest, 1,485 tons of poultry, 5,600 tons of mushrooms, 2,200 tons of turnips, 700 tons of cauliflower and broccoli, and up to 5,000 tons of fish. Tell me that that can be justifiable.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie. Kildare
KFM. Okay, talking about food there, Mary asks, willful waste makes woeful want, to quote my granny saying, it's an absolute disgrace, and she wonders if it's to do with EU directives. Well, some of it is. By the way, we didn't even mention the thousands of tons of fruit that go to waste. And indeed, we often find when you're buying your fruit in supermarkets, you reach in and you find bananas that are overripe, you find oranges that are overripe, apples and so forth, and tomatoes. Kind of frequent enough in regards to that. And a listener has emailed us in regards to gathering around the family meal table many, many years ago and the way things have changed, whether families sit down for family meals anymore. But we'll have more of that as we go on during the course of the morning, Owen.
Yeah, Maynooth University event on Tuesday next week will explore the changing security and defence landscape in Europe and how the war in Ukraine is influencing these changes. Professor John O'Brennan is Jean Monnet Professor of European Integration and Director of the Maynooth Centre for European and Eurasian Studies at Maynooth University. Professor O'Brennan, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen.
Before we talk about the event next Tuesday, we've been hearing on the news today that it's 100 days since Russia has invaded Ukraine. Ukraine at the moment is fighting for time, trying to hold out against overwhelming Russian fire on its eastern front, long enough for Western weapons to arrive and give it a badly needed edge. The White House has pledged $700 million of weapons as well. Whereabouts are we in terms of this invasion? What's happening at the moment?
Well, as you say, Owen, it's 100 days since the invasion. I think there have been different phases of the war, and it's probably now settled into a kind of attritional phase. The Russians, I think, very clearly are prepared to sacrifice tens of thousands of their own soldiers' lives, and they certainly don't care about Ukrainian lives lost or even Ukrainian civilian lives. So I think their strategy has been that they will prevail in the longer term because they have a significantly larger military capacity and military force. The war hasn't gone well for them. That's hardly a secret. Perhaps 25,000 Russian soldiers have died, and the conflict in recent weeks has switched from the north of the country, mainly to the east, to the Donbass region. And the Russians do seem to have had at least more success than they had previously when they attacked Kyiv and Kharkiv in the north. But it's still very difficult, I think, to predict how this will end, because just as there is evidence to suggest that the Russians are gaining territory, at least incrementally, there are also deep question marks about the morale of Russian troops and their capacity to hold out indefinitely. Remember that sanctions imposed by the European Union and the United States were very deliberately sequenced, and they are beginning to hurt the Russians now. And it's anybody's question as to where they're going to be sort of 3 months from now, and that will crucially then influence whether they can afford to continue with the war.
Now, thousands have been killed, as we know, more than 6 million people forced to flee the country since Russia launched what Ukraine says was an unprovoked invasion on the 24th of February. The United Nations quoted as saying that there'd be no victor from this invasion, and one-fifth of Ukraine is still under occupation. I mentioned that figure as well from the United States. $700 million of weapons, including advanced rocket systems, have been greeted with a touch of scepticism, some saying it's too little, too late. Perhaps this should have been done a couple of weeks back.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that the United States has provided hugely significant support to Ukraine right from the very beginning of this conflict. So remember, this is just the latest package. There have been other packages over the previous 3 months or so, which helped the Ukrainians fend off the Russian assault in Kyiv, in the north and elsewhere. I think we're probably going to see more of this as the summer weeks go on. But the Ukrainians keep making appeals, not just to Washington, but to their European allies as well, to send them the long-range artillery that they need. This is where they seem to be particularly outgunned, and they're asking for multiple launch rocket systems and things of that kind, just to kind of equal the playing field a little bit and reduce the advantages that the Russians have in this field.
You touched on the Ukraine's pleas for help as well, and I know that next Tuesday in your roundtable discussion you're going to be focusing on that, the different reaction to those cries from Ukraine, positions taken by the likes of France, Germany and Poland, and also the unilateral decisions of Finland and Sweden to seek membership of NATO.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, Owen, that we have seen really dramatic changes in Europe since the 24th of February. In fact, we've seen the most complete reordering of the security landscape in Europe since at least the fall of the Berlin Wall back in 1989. And I think it's true to say that Europeans probably had become very complacent about defence and security. That's reflected in the figures. Remember, Donald Trump used to get very annoyed that NATO's European allies didn't spend anything like the amount on defence that they should have and that the United States did. Well, that's changed very dramatically. Germany, for example, announced that it is going to spend another 100 billion euros on its defence in the years to come. And as you said, Finland and Sweden have both decided that membership of NATO is the only option for them. That's because, of course, they fear, what might happen if the Russians were to prevail in Ukraine. And we've also seen, I think, very interestingly this week, Denmark, which is a member of NATO, but had an opt-out from the European Union's common security and defence policy, voted in a referendum very heavily in favour of getting rid of the opt-out. So that means that Denmark, already a member of NATO, is going to be joining those European Union structures of defence and security. And that, I think, really poses an interesting question for Ireland, because we'll be one of the very few member states remaining that sits effectively outside of that structure. So I think there are really interesting and challenging questions coming down the line for Irish policy, both defence policy and foreign policy.
Absolutely. Rapidly changing security landscape, as you say. Just give us the details of that event then next Tuesday, Professor O'Brien. If people want to go along, how can they do so? Is it in person or online?
Well, yes, Owen, it is an in-person event. We wanted to get world-leading experts in a room, so it's being held in the Aenthus building on the North Campus, Tuesday between 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock. We have Professor Henry Farrell from Johns Hopkins University in Washington, Professor Bridget Laffin, Professor Ben Tonra, David O'Sullivan, who used to be the EU's ambassador to the United States, and we have the Finnish ambassador as well. And I think it'll be particularly interesting for people to hear about the conversation in Finland as it's developed over the last 3 months and the relevance that might have for Ireland. So if anybody is interested, they can go to my Twitter handle, John O'Brien2, to that of Maynooth University, or just Google Maynooth Youth European Centre, and you'll find it there very easily. And the registration is very straightforward.
Okay, it's a roundtable discussion on the changing European security landscape and Ireland's place within it. And Jean Monnet, Professor of European Integration and Director of the Maynooth Centre for European and Eurasian Studies, Maynooth University's Professor John O'Brien. Professor O'Brien, many thanks once again for joining us.
Thanks, Owen.
As always, Owen, great analysis from Professor O'Brien there in regards to that. There should be a really good event on Tuesday. Get on then to the relevant contact points that John O'Brien has said there, and you can get all the details and maybe attend that. What should be a very, I think, informative event. Now, back to the food. And we actually got an email from a listener who says, in my young days, being part of a large family, meals during the week were quick and organised, as it took two settings to serve us all, with my mother sitting aside having her food so that she could monitor what we were doing. Were you throwing potatoes at each other, I wonder? Sundays were different in that we sat around and chatted and shared a block of ice cream. The boys washed up. Oh God, they must have been exceptional boys. And we headed off to play. We were hungry for our meals and never thought of food outside of mealtimes. Food was never thrown out, and dinner was sometimes a mishmash of leftovers, with my mother often making a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Oh, so many mothers have done that, including my own mother, Lily, has always done that. When I had my own children, says this listener, I tried to make mealtimes a time for us to sit down together and chat and discuss, and there were a few arguments for good measure. In today's busy world, with children involved in many activities daily and parents busy working to pay for their homes, it takes a lot of organising to create a period in the day where all can sit together to eat and interact. But this is an invaluable time between the generations. Even discussing the minutiae of the day can lead to interesting discussions, and family ideals are often passed on to the younger generation. It's of value to the older generation too, and keeps parents aware of changes since their own day. Yeah, sitting around the table, ma'am, who had 12 of us. Indeed, we often sat around the table, and there'd be great competition for a slice of meat. And by God, we did appreciate our food. And there was no thing when you sat around the table of 12 in bygone days, there was no sort of, I'm not eating that, I don't like carrots, or whatever else. The thing is, you had to keep your arms around the plate to ward off the bandits and the ambushes which would come across with the fork to try and take a bit of your own. Yeah, time's gone by. But I mean, it's unconscionable how many tens of thousands of food has been wasted, as we heard there earlier from Dr. Jennifer Attard of the Munster Technological University on that research. Okay, I'm joined now by a looper. Well, at least I think she's a looper anyway. Or is she a looper? No, I don't think she's a looper. But I'm just wondering, is she a looper? A joint leader of the Social Democrats Party, Kildare North TD, Social Democrats TD, Catherine Murphy, are you a looper?
I didn't think I was, you know. but look, some of the Public Accounts Committee have been described by some officials in the Department.
Well, let's say, apparently, according to a report that we saw in one of the papers, during a roundtable preparatory session in the unit at the Department of Health, ahead of the department's appearance before your committee, of which your deputy chairperson, Catherine Murphy, so you, I think, might be high on the loopers list there, last December, the official name is John O'Grady. And I quote what it said, the report says, he said, not for repeating, but there are a few loopers in the Public Accounts Committee, which makes it even more unpredictable. And that's according to a recording of the meeting obtained by the Irish Examiner. Strange way to describe the committee, is it not, Catherine?
Yeah, look, it's not the first time that there's been, you know, derogatory terminology used about the Public Accounts Committee. Before the pandemic, Mr. Watt was overheard, who's the Secretary General of the Department of Public Enterprise and Reform at the time, was called the committee a mob. So, and came in then apologised for it and said he didn't mean any offence. So, look, the thing about it is it isn't really about how we personally hear those kind of things. And to be perfectly honest with you, you know, it really is the sticks and stones territory, you know.
But nevertheless, Catherine, you are elected by the people of this country. You are speaking on our behalf. You are tasked with ensuring, and the Public Accounts Committee and other Oireachtas committees, but in this case, ensuring that taxpayers' money is properly spent, distributed and discharged. And if we put Mr. Watts and Mr. O'Grady's term together, to be describing the committee as a mob of loopers is absolutely disrespectful.
Yes, I was just going to make that very point, Clem. It does show a disrespect for the elected branch who have a job to do. It may well be that there are people who don't feel happy about coming in front of the Public Accounts Committee, you know, who are really, you know, trying to hold the executive to account and how money is spent and if we're getting value for money. And that's the function of the Public Accounts Committee, which is pretty important, you know.
Yeah. But there seems, Catherine, to be a further kind of dismissive attitude that in response to that newspaper report in The Examiner, a spokesperson for the Department of Health, rather than saying maybe we regret that comment and it wasn't appropriate, you know, it doesn't represent the overall view of the Department of Health, actually didn't even address the scenario other than saying we're aware of alleged recordings of internal meetings being circulated. We strongly believe that quoting the casual comments of individuals will only serve to limit constructive debate across the civil service, which is damaging to the public interest. Well, I think that's outrageous, because what's damaging to the public interest is high-grade officials in the department, if that represents their attitude to the elected representatives of the taxpayers of this country.
Indeed, and in fact, it's not the first tape recording. You'll remember that there was an official who identified some very major issues in recordings there not so long ago about a prior year adjustment, which we were told at a recent Public Accounts Committee. I actually asked the question that 74 million was the prior year adjustment, which meant that the accounts had to be amended after they had been audited. We were told also in that recording that the HSE, that the Department of Health were very critical of the HSE about the number of people it was hiring, where there was money to hire 10,000 and 5,500 had been recruited. And there was very uncomplimentary things being said about the HSE by the Department of Health. Now, I questioned Mr. Watt about that when he was in, but the whistleblower who actually drew attention to those issues that are, you know, of significant public importance and concern has been suspended. And it appears to me that there is more attention on how to stop the recordings rather than the substance of those recordings. And that, I think, is another aspect that should be of significant concern. And I think that that kind of disrespect that has been shown in relation to those comments actually don't do the public service any favours, because there are so many good people in the public service. We've had very good people in front of the Public Accounts Committee that properly account for things, that, you know, when you ask them for information, they give that information. And, you know, like this kind of disrespect is certainly, it doesn't help the executive branch, and it certainly shows an awful disrespect for the people who are elected by the people of this country who are sovereign.
All right. On that note, Catherine Murphy, we can confirm, is not a looper, and it's not appropriate to be describing people in those terms as mob or loopers, indeed, as was recounted in that particular report. Catherine, have a good weekend.